Hello, everyone. It's John Marks, and welcome to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. Today's topic is going to be manage your money like you manage your career. And I'd like to welcome our special guest. His name is Howard Jakeway. He goes by Jake. He has 31 years experience in law enforcement, including 6 years as a chief of police. He has consulted with numerous agencies on pension design, administration, and investment. And he's also testified before several state legislative committees on police and fire pension issues. Currently, he's teaching a class for the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at the University of Denver entitled Set Your Own Financial Course, How to Think About Money and Finance. And he's agreed to share some of his insights with us from his experience in law enforcement and in financial management. Jake, thank you very much for volunteering to be here. I appreciate your time.
Well, you're welcome. This is a topic that I've always been interested in, particularly for police officers and the aspects of the law enforcement profession that are impacted by one's work in finance. And basically, I guess as a lead-in, I'd like to say that police officers, of course, deal with very risky situations, and the way that they deal with that is by learning how to manage risk. And those same skills, if they give it a little bit of thought, can be applied certainly to management of finances.
I can speak from my own personal experience that when I was young and first became a police officer, I did not do a very good job of paying attention to my personal life, including my finances. I paid a lot of attention to what we were trained about doing on the street, but I didn't often apply those same principles to taking care of my own life.
Well, I think that's a very common thing, and I cannot tell you that I have always understood the aspects of finance that were important to me. When I was a young cop, I was more interested in the adventure of the thing. I never thought about retirement. I never thought about getting older. I won't say I wasn't able, but I didn't spend much time visualizing that far into the future. Mm-hmm. And now I'm here, and I feel fortunate that I've learned enough about finances to help me out in terms of having a comfortable retirement.
Yeah. So you've had a lot of experience on both sides of this. Where should we go with this interview? What should we talk about as far as helping officers not only recognize the importance of doing this, which I think is the first hurdle, but then, you know, maybe some specifics about what they can do?
Well, I think that one of the aspects of it, going back to the risk, is that people look at financial situations as, number one, something that can be very convoluted and complicated. And it is true that there is a lot of information out there, sometimes too much information, and the important aspect is looking at themselves individually and recognizing that they can manage risk, and I say manage risk as opposed to eliminate risk, as one of the things in their own financial planning. And I would use as an example, if you look at the situations that have occurred, old Bernie Madoff certainly is a good example of how people look at their own ability or what they perceive to be their lack of ability to do these types of things and to make decisions about financial matters and how they want to get into a, quote, risk-free investment. And, of course, the subtext of the Madoff Ponzi scheme, as with others around, is that you can get some kind of an outsized return with an undersized risk. And there is always a correlation between the risk that you have with financial investments and the return that you get. So it's not a question of eliminating risks. It's a question of managing those risks such that you are able to achieve what you want to achieve. And when I say you, I say you have to look at the individual officer in their own circumstance. As an example, for retirement, if somebody is interested in a great deal of travel, perhaps, or doing something that's going to be important, that's going to cost quite a bit of money for them to do, that means that they have to account for that in their financial planning. If someone else, on the other hand, wants to sit on the front porch and whittle, their expenses are going to be a good knife, a sharpening stone, and a bunch of blocks of wood to whittle with. So that is something that must be taken into account, and it is an individual type of decision that must be made with the officer and his or her family in terms of how they approach these types of things.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of young officers just sort of assume that somebody's going to be managing their money for them because they have a pension that their organization contributes to, and they don't really feel like they have to pay any attention.
Well, yes. The defined benefit plan, which I think is what you're talking about, where you work for a number of years, and then at the end of that period of time, you qualify for a pension, which is a fixed amount of money that may or may not be adjusted for inflation. The percentage of income replacement that a person is receiving may or may not be adequate depending on what it is that they want to do. So that's why I stress the individual component of that. Whereas, obviously, a defined benefit plan is something that is the same for everybody. So if you have one, that still does not mean that that's the end of your financial planning. You still have to look at it in terms of how it meets your needs.
Is some of this kind of an educational issue that I can speak from my experience again? I didn't really understand much about finance, economics, and money management, and so I just tuned it out. And I guess the old saying is ignorance is bliss. Sometimes when you don't know, you try not to dabble in that area. And maybe is it an educational issue that people just need to learn a little bit more about the concept in general?
I think generally it's good to have an understanding. For instance, what I recommend in terms of investments, and you're always talking about investments, whether you're talking about your money into a defined benefit plan or your money into a defined contribution plan where you choose the investments, or simply investing your own money outside of a pension plan, is that they should not invest in something that they don't understand. Yeah. Now, the problem with that statement is that you can get into very complex areas of investment principles, but you don't really need to know all of those. If you look, for instance, at the major categories of investments, stocks, bonds, and cash equivalents, you can get into a very detailed background analyses of why stocks outperform bonds over the long term, but they do so with greater volatility, which is another definition of risk. Why cash and cash equivalents essentially are there only to maintain your money, your capital, at the level at which it is without it growing in value, because they generally equal the inflation rate. Long-term, stocks have returned an average of 10%, bonds 6%, and cash equivalents 3%. Since the long-term inflation rate is 3%, that means that the cash and cash equivalents, as I mentioned, only maintain your money at its current level. Bonds give you a real rate of return. And when I say a real rate of return, I mean the number of loaves of bread that you can buy for a given amount of money of 3%, and stocks return an average of 7% real rate of return.
Being adjusted for the inflation rate.
Adjusted for the inflation rate, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, there are a lot of reasons for that, but I'll tell you something that you won't read very often about why that is.
Go ahead.
What do stocks represent? They represent owners. They represent ownership. You own a piece of a company.
Uh-huh.
Bonds represent a loan to a company. Because when you buy a bond, you're making a loan to the company or to the federal government or to the state or local government if it's a question of a municipal bond.
Right.
And who will be better taken care of in the long run, the owner or the lender? It's going to be the owner.
Well, that should be good for us.
John, you're fading.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said that should be good for us then as the owners or stockholders.
Yes, it should. And so when you're looking at parceling out your investments, it's important to have for long term some stocks as a part of your overall investment. And that's true even for somebody in retirement.
Hmm.
Unless you have enough money that the bonds themselves are going to generate all of the income that you need, then it's important to have some growth in your investments in order to meet your future needs. Along with that, however, you have volatility.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the volatility that exists in markets is something that scares a lot of people.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the current economic situation both in the United States and around the world, and I think a lot of people are afraid to be investing in the stock market.
Yes, they are. And I've talked to an awful lot of people who have they say, well, my investments are going to be safe. I want them to be safe, so I'm going to put them all in a CD at the bank, or I'm putting, you know, in something of that nature.
Right.
Or I'm going to have all of my money in bonds, and none in stocks because the stock market is just too scary. Well, what's happened with that volatility, which is another definition of risk? The volatility has increased, and the reason that that has happened is that the time period during which changes occur in the overall economic background has compressed. So a change in a company's or a change in one country's or economy or the world economy that normally would have taken place over several years' period of time gets compressed into a shorter period of time, which makes the volatility greater, but does not change the overall trend.
Yeah. Well,
so if you're looking at an investment to provide you with a return 20 years from now, that's different than an investment in which you're going to use the return a year from now.
Oh, good point. And I think some people think so far in the long term that they kind of start to ignore everything.
Well, that's true. That's true also. And you have to tie the investment to your goal for that investment. When is it that you want to use it?
Yeah.
And if somebody said to me, I'm going to use this money that I'm investing a year from now, and I'm going to use it all a year from now, I certainly couldn't recommend a stock or a group of stocks that they could be assured were going to at least return their money if not make a return on their money
mm-hmm.
a year from now. 20 years from now, absolutely.
You know, how do you get young people in their 20s to really start taking an ownership of this process? You know, especially when you're brand new in law enforcement, you've got all kinds of things on your mind, all the stuff they've jammed into your head at the academy, and, you know, all the street survival things that you're trying to focus on while you're working. It seems like it's really easy to block out financial management, and yet I love your concept about managing your money like you manage your career. It's one more facet of risk or even stress management that we have to focus on, but I don't know how we get people's attention focused on that.
Well, I think people have to see themselves in that situation somehow.
Mm-hmm.
They have to recognize how that money relates to their values. You know, one of the exercises that I have my class do at Ollie is to sit down, take a piece of paper, spend some time, and write down what they would do if money were no object.
Mm-hmm.
If they had unlimited resources, what would they do?
I've done that exercise before, and it's an excellent idea.
Yeah, it really is, and that speaks to the differences among us and thus the personal ownership.
Yeah.
In other words, you're not just a one number within a group of numbers, let's say within a pension plan, et cetera. You're not just one number. You are a person. You are somebody that is included in that group for reasons that you have chosen and not strictly just by happenstance. And those reasons have to do with the commitment that I see police officers make. And it is a commitment, and I know how much of a commitment it is because I know what the costs can be on an officer personally in the law enforcement career.
Yeah.
And that certainly involves the danger factor, but it also involves the ways in which they have to deal with people who are in dire straits, in dire circumstances. They see people in these crisis modes, whether they're personal, financial, physical, et cetera, all of these crises.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to keep in mind what their own values are. And their values certainly relate to their family, their spouse, their children, their circle of friends, all of these kinds of things. If you ask people, those are important to them. And in being able to make those choices that they want to in life, that's where the money aspect comes in.
Yeah.
It has to do with choices. If you think about it, the real purpose of money is to provide you with options now and in the future so that you can do this or you can do that, whatever is important to you and your family.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking one of the reasons Cops Alive was founded was to help officers not only focus on taking care of the people they work with on the street, but also recognizing that in a career that can be very toxic, they need to learn to take care of themselves as well. And I think a lot of young officers get so focused on their mission that they exclude their own personal safety. And even though they're focused on, you know, not getting shot or getting hurt, they sacrifice their emotions. They sacrifice, to a great deal of stress. And I think some of that is their own financial well-being.
Well, it is. There's the sense that you have so many things to deal with that you cannot possibly make all these decisions about a far-off, distant future.
Yeah.
As well as managing things in the current time, because let's face it, one of the ways that are required for you to build up some your finances is a little bit of delayed gratification.
Cops are not good at delayed gratification.
The secret is balance, John. The secret is to balance that such that, I mean, I don't recommend that everybody save every penny. If they like a good cup of coffee, maybe at a, Starbucks if that appeals, or whatever, that they avoid doing that because they could take that, I don't know, what's a cup of coffee cost at Starbucks these days? They could take that and put it away. I'm not for that.
Yeah.
I'm for balance, because you have to live your life now, and you have to prepare to live your life in the future. And and in order to do so, you've got to kind of allocate your money a little bit. That's part of your current expenses. But also, you need to look at how, for instance, in budgeting, how things meet your purpose. A vehicle, purchase of a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can buy a vehicle that everyone else would look at and go, wow, that's a terrific vehicle. If that's the primary reason you bought the vehicle, it's not really serving you. It's serving others' image of you.
Right.
When I buy a vehicle, I look at what's reasonably comfortable, handles well, it's going to last a long time, be inexpensive to operate, and whether a neighbor or somebody else, a coworker, might look at it and go, oh boy, that's a terrific vehicle, or not, is not of primary importance to me.
Yeah.
That's part of the decision-making that goes into budgeting. And it's again a question of balance. Otherwise, you wind up like, I'm thinking many years ago, I recall reading about the couple in, I think it was Cleveland, could have been Detroit, one of those two, that died in their apartment. They didn't have their medications that they were required to have or should have had.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have adequate food, and the power to the apartment had been turned off because of non-payment of utility bills and so on and so forth, and they found several hundred thousand dollars in that apartment, stuffed literally in the mattress.
Wow. You know, one of the things that I thought of when you were talking about balance also is one of the reasons we as patrol officers or even detectives work in as partners, work in teams, is that sometimes you balance out each other's strengths. And I think a lot of officers haven't really thought about that as far as a relationship or a marriage, but that's something else that you can balance out in your life is, you know, maybe your spouse is the person that is more focused on the finances and is better at taking care of those. But at least you have to acknowledge that maybe that's not your strong suit and find somebody to help you with that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I think that as a you need your spouse to be a partner financially just as you do emotionally. And yes, that's true.
Yeah.
In my own marriage, my wife has other aspects that she's dealing with. She's doing volunteer work for a couple of different organizations that she believes in, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to make more of the financial decisions. But that's always with an understanding that it's our finances. And one of the things that I've seen with officers over the years that's always, well, I won't say fascinated me necessarily, but has always perplexed me, is that I've seen a lot of officers who will share with their spouses a story about, you know, they finding a lost child or something of that nature, or, you know, something that's good news, but they don't use their spouses as a partner in their emotional aspects and talking about those things that are not so nice to talk about. Where the lost child is not found alive, or so on and so forth.
And yeah.
How they felt about that. That applies with money. It applies with emotions and our relationships with people important to us.
Yeah, good advice. You know, one of the things, particularly with the current economic situation, I don't know when people are going to listen to this, but I think people are stressed about money. And one of the things we talk about on Cops Alive is trying to manage stress. And there are obviously all kinds of stressors, but money has to be a big one for most people, not just cops, but everybody. And if you ladle that on top of what the stress load is for a typical police officer, for some people, I'm sure it's overwhelming. Do you have any thoughts on how to manage our stress around money?
Well, yes, I think so. One of them is to have a plan, and that involves a budget, that involves objectives, that involves our long-term goals, so that you can see progress toward that. And, of course, you have to take into account your pension system and that type of thing. And that is, I think, one of the big things. If you listen to the stories that go on with people, that they seem to want to not pay any attention to financial matters when things are tough financially, as they are right now, as you mentioned. It is true. There is so much change, and there is so much information and disinformation from people that it's easy to just turn away from that without realizing that you don't have to participate in all of that. You do not have to be led by everyone else in making your own decisions and with your family about finances. And that is simply having a plan, having a budget. Now, again, I don't believe in you know, you list every penny, but just a rough budget, and you know that a portion of that is saving or preparation for the future. And just having that, knowing about that, is an important thing. And that leads to also one of the basics of good financial planning, and that is to have an emergency fund. Now, the emergency fund says, gosh, if the transmission goes out in the car, if the roof needs replacement, not as a result of a hailstorm that the insurance company is going to pay for, or you've got a big medical bill, a substantial portion of which is not insured or something of that nature, that you have a preparation for that. That's what an emergency fund is about. And I recommend that people have several months at least of expense money tucked away in an emergency fund. And be that a bank account, a CD, or something of that nature, that's readily accessible and usable, so that if something happens to you individually or with the economy generally, knowing that you have that there and you won't have to alter your other long-term plans, I think can provide you with a real sense of control over your financial situation. Whereas if you're month to month, if you would have serious financial disruption if you had the equivalent of one paycheck that didn't arrive, then you're probably living a little bit close to the edge.
Yeah, I think most people in law enforcement would tell you they're very good at tactical planning. And if you take a typical street cop and you send them to a bank robbery or a robbery in progress, they can lay out an entire plan in their mind as they're en route to the call. And, you know, they got everything set up when they get there. And yet you ask them to turn that same sort of microscope to their own lives and they can't do it. And I've always found that kind of fascinating because we just don't look inward nearly enough.
Well, I think that there's a concept related to that that has to do with the accord we give people based on expertise. We tend to look at people, let's say in the financial industry, that, oh, they're experts. How can I possibly know that much as somebody like that? So obviously I have to leave it to them. And if they say things are bad, then gosh, they must be bad.
Right.
Well, you have to keep in mind that it was a very large group of financial experts who brought us such things as credit default swaps, who brought us such things as mortgage-backed securities in a situation where the lender did not have any stake in the outcome of the loan.
Yeah.
If you just look at real estate values and what has happened, and essentially the causation behind the so-called Great Recession, you had a lot of people, very highly educated, that were looking at very short-term, large gains and had no appreciation for the longer-term implications of what it was that they were doing.
Yeah. And the rest of us were just sitting on the sidelines.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. And, you know, it's good to sit on the sidelines when you don't like what's going on in the game. And good personal financial planning allows you to do so. And I say that because if you look at the Great Recession, I chose not to participate.
Good choice. I don't think most people think of it as a choice.
It is. And you can choose to do so because you don't have to do it. When I look at situations where people are doing things that don't make any sense, that doesn't mean that gosh, I have to be impacted by that because I have my finances set up in such a manner that because I've done some planning, I have choices at various points. And that's what financial planning is about for the individual, is choices and maintaining those choices.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, I have a small account that was left over from monies when I was working for the state, and I left there and retired in 2002, and that money has doubled.
Oh.
Right now. Now, it could have tripled or quadrupled if I had just invested in certain things just off the cuff without thinking about it. And it did so. It doubled based upon just diversification.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, let's see, 2002 to 2011, 9 years, divide into 72, which is how you determine when what's required for an investment to double, that means that I had a return average of 8%.
That's pretty good.
This was during the decade when stocks had supposedly the lost decade.
Yeah.
When there was no return for that decade, if you looked at it from the S&P 500 or Dow and so on and so forth.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't mean that I'm a brilliant guy, but it does mean that I'm barely smart enough to know how smart I'm not. But because of financial planning and just taking a reasonable risk and looking for a reasonable rate of return instead of no risk and high rate of return or high risk and high rate of return, I did okay.
Can we talk about maybe some how-tos or some resources that you would recommend to help people kind of get to that position of comfort? That's what I hear in your voice. I hear comfort. And
yes.
I think that's what everyone strives for, is to feel comfortable with their ability to manage their money.
Absolutely. One of them that I think makes for some good reading on any number of topics having to do with retirement and retirement planning is the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Mm-hmm. And that can be found on the internet at crr@bc.edu.
Okay.
And you've got any number of articles on there with a great deal of research behind them on some good retirement planning.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Also, I would recommend that people look at the various large fund companies and their websites, which have excellent material on them. And I would recommend specifically Vanguard, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, and Schwab, S-C-H-W-A-B. Those all have an awful lot of material that's available to you, even if you're not a customer of those firms.
Things like planning calculators and things like that? Is that what you're suggesting?
Planning calculators, yes. You have a question. I have this much money, and I want it to last for this long. How much can I take per month?
Mm-hmm. Or probably I make this much now, and I'd like to have the same quality of life when I retire. How much is it going to take to fund that retirement?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
Excellent.
There's another one
down
for
Vanguard, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, and Schwab.
T. Rowe Price, Schwab, Fidelity, Vanguard, yes.
Okay, good.
And you can also find those things on the PARA website, Public Employees Retirement Association, the state retirement agency. They have calculators on their website that are available to you, whether you're a PARA member or not.
Okay. In some of the materials we exchanged prior to this, one of the things you talked about is the condition of our public sector pensions and what the future looks like for those. Do you want to share some thoughts about that? Because I think, a lot of I think both police officers and firefighters certainly are concerned about how their pensions are being managed and what they need to know about that.
Yes, they do, because if you look at other than the federal government, which, of course, can print money, state governments cannot do that. City governments, county governments cannot do that. So they have to, in order to pay you money, they have to have money.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just as important that those be financially viable as it is with your own investments. If, for instance, you're in a money purchase plan or simply talking about the money that you're investing in addition to whatever pension plan you're in. Many of those, I think probably a lot of your listeners certainly have heard about the situation in Wisconsin with public pensions. They probably heard about all of the issues with PARA in Colorado. And what you're talking about with these systems is a situation where, in many cases, the governmental entity has traded questions of current salary. In other words, instead of we're going to give you this much of an increase, et cetera, we're going to make this adjustment to your pension. Well, that takes funding in order to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
It takes funding. It takes a good investment, sound investment, et cetera, and ultimately they can't pay you more than what is there. They simply can't do it. If somebody worked for Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which you may have heard in the last couple of days, is going through bankruptcy, although it's a particular type that I think will allow payment of some obligations and so on.
Yeah.
But it's possible for public entities to go bankrupt.
Yep.
So it's important that people kind of keep a handle on that. And quite often there's an unspoken form of agreement that occurs between members of a pension plan and the entity that provides that pension plan, be it a city, county, or state, that, gee, we don't want to pay, we as members don't want to pay any more into it than we have to, but we want the maximum amount of benefits that we can get out of it. And that's something that realistically over the long run can't happen. You have to have a reasonable relationship between inputs and outputs given reasonable investments.
Yeah.
And a lot of that disparity between the amount of resources available within the pension plan and the benefits to be paid from that pension plan occurred as a result of the year 2008. In the year 2008, of course, you had, almost 40% decline in the major markets, the Dow and the S&P 500.
Yeah.
And that, when you have a prospective gain that you're looking at on an actuarial basis of about 8%, and then you have a loss of 38%, you are substantially in the hole.
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem.
And that takes a period of time to work that out. And if you look in Colorado, they made substantial changes to the state pension fund in primarily for retirees in the area of the cost of living allowance.
Uh-huh.
And that is an important differential. They went from a guaranteed every year 3.5% increase, and that is, of course, cumulative.
Mm-hmm.
And that would pretty much keep you up with inflation, to a 2% increase. And then if they have a losing investment year, then it's up to 2%.
Wow.
But it is required that you have at least consumer price index rises by 2%, and if it rises by less, then it goes up by less. That's a huge difference, John.
Yes,
that is
yes.
A huge difference.
Huh.
One of the things that I was looking at when I started our pension plan with the City of Wheat Ridge Police Department was that at that time we had the standard under the state. There were three categories of based upon population of your entity, under 30,000, 30 to 50, I think 50 and up. I'm not sure about those specific numbers, but at that time, I knew of several police chiefs, retired police chiefs in the state of Colorado. They were receiving a pension, which was half their salary at the time that they retired. And you know what they were receiving? About $300 a month. They had no COLA. There
yeah.
was no cost of living increase. That's a huge difference.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I'm perhaps remiss. It dawned on me that we're kind of talking about people that have pensions, and I don't have a clue what the percentage is in the United States or certainly around the world. There certainly must be people that don't have that as a benefit to their employment. And I wonder if you could spend a couple of minutes just taking the basics and talking to somebody who really has to eke out not only their existence, but maybe put aside money for investment starting at the beginning of their career, and they have to do it on their own.
Within the money purchase plan, or people that don't even have that?
Yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, I started this out assuming that most people have that, but I don't actually know. Even in the United States, do you believe that almost every police agency offers a pension or a retirement as a benefit? Because I'm betting maybe there are some places where they don't even have that as a benefit.
I think there are probably some. Most have either a defined benefit plan,
mm-hmm.
or they have a money purchase plan in which the city contributes something to the pension. And most the people that don't have any form of that whatsoever are in private industry, and even those are a fairly small number. But with the money purchase plan, of course, you've got to put your money in, and the entity, the city or the county or state, whatever, puts in their contribution, and you simply, subject to the vesting schedule, own that money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you do have to look at investing.
Yeah.
And you do have to look at how those are structured. I know of one entity in the state of Colorado, and hopefully they have changed it at this point in time, but they had a money purchase plan, except what you earned was a function of the overall investments, and you made no individual choices on those investments.
Yeah.
The problem with that, you can certainly see, is that if you retired or planned on retiring at the end of 2008, you probably didn't.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And you didn't because what's appropriate for a person at the end of their career is not appropriate for a person at the beginning of their career in terms of the investments.
Yeah, true.
And that's where that individual choice does come in. Essentially, that aspect, the risk or rate of return, they say in a money purchase plan transfers only to the officer, but that's not really true because in a defined benefit plan, as we've discussed at least briefly, if the entity can't print money, then the officer is still subject to that rate of return. And yes, bankruptcies do occur.
Yeah. Right.
And changes do occur, even though you're receiving what it was that you were supposed to receive, you still are subject to having some aspects of that change, which lessens the value.
Right.
Perhaps.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about, I have been told, I don't know that I remember it when I was young, but one of the real challenges is to start doing this at the very beginning of your career. This is not something you put off for 10 years while you save up to buy a house. You have to start setting money aside, whether, you know, someone's doing it for you or whether you do it in addition to that. You have to start setting money aside and take advantage of compounding interest over 20 or 30 years in order to get the true benefit from some of these investments.
Oh, yes, that's very true. That's very true. And that's a difficult thing to show people because it's always a question of, do I spend it for something that I want now? As
like
opposed
a new car
to saving
or a new
it
boat.
For something I need later.
Yeah.
And that's where you get into the looking at the ability to look into the future in terms of what you and your family want to have.
Yeah.
I don't know of any other way to put it. It still comes back to delayed gratification. You've got to put it away. And you should put it away in such a manner that if in the future or for investments to pay off where you're going to use the money in the future, that you look at something with more volatility, that being stocks as opposed to bonds, and so on. And then within each of those categories, of course, there are variations within stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Such as dividend-paying stocks. If you look right now, at this time, a long-term government bond, supposedly a, quote, riskless investment,
mm-hmm.
You're looking at, a rate of return of 3.25, I think, approximately as of today. I could look that up right now, but it's approximately that.
Mm-hmm.
You can get with a diversified portfolio of dividend-paying stocks that are very solid companies, you can get at or above that figure, and the stocks are going to give you growth,
right,
as well as a rate of return, whereas you're not going to get growth out of the bonds.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that keeps resonating with me is, you know, we can talk to people about budgeting and having a plan, but it sure strikes me that they need to consider investing or savings for investment as part of that budget from day one. And I think most people get their first paycheck and it's like, oh my God, I'm going to go spend this on this and this and this and this. And many of them forget about their normal everyday expenses, much less their investment obligation. But it sure strikes me that people really need to take ownership. I think you used that word earlier, ownership of their investment strategy. You know, they probably should be doing it when they're teenagers, much less when they first get a job in law enforcement.
Oh, yes. Yes, they should. I guess some of us are taught that from a very early age. Others are not.
Yeah. Well, I'm betting those that were probably learned it from their parents. I don't think we teach enough of this in school.
Oh, we don't. This type of education is sadly lacking. You're seeing a lot of initiatives now and programs to provide that, but it's provided as a sideline rather than kind of a core issue for people.
Yeah.
And we would all, and I mean all, be better off if we all learned that early on.
Yeah.
There's an author and a book that I'd like to recommend that people perhaps take a look at and read.
Okay.
It's called Predictably Irrational, and that's written by Dan Ariely, A-R-I-E-L-I, and he holds dual doctorates in economics and psychology, and he talks about the things that people do that are, if you ask them about it in another context, not involving themselves, they could give you a rational answer, and yet they go out and they do things that are not rational. And there was a cute little thing that I saw with, he was on one of the news programs, might have been 60 Minutes recently, within the last couple of months, and he was dealing with his children, and he... I don't know, one was 9 and one was 5 or something like that. I don't recall the exact ages, but he gave them the opportunity to make a choice. And for the son, who was the older of the two, the son really liked to play video games. And so he was giving the child the option of you can go and you can do your homework now, you can play your video games for a half hour now and then go do your homework. Or if you go do your homework and get it done first, then you can come back and you can play your video games for an hour. So you get twice the rate of return by doing something that you need to do first. And he had a similar thing with the young daughter. And that illustrates that delayed gratification.
Right. But I'm betting the impulse is to not delay. It just seems to me that that's human nature.
Well, it is human nature.
Or maybe that could be an American issue. I'm not sure if that's a cultural issue or not, but it may very well be.
No, I think it's human nature. The only differences are, you know, various countries are what it is that we prefer to do.
Yeah.
But the same principle applies pretty much universally.
Well, certainly an important point in managing your money, no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I wanted to confirm the title of the book was Predictably Irrational by Dan Ariely?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's available generally. I think I picked up a copy at Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
Published by Harper.
Do you have any other thoughts that you would like to... share with our audience before we wrap up? Anything else that we haven't covered?
Well, no, I would just like to say that you can learn about finances. It is in your best interest to do so. It is what allows you to be in control and make choices now and in the future instead of others. And that the pace of information that is out there is probably too great, rather than having a lack of information. There's plenty of information there, and maybe we get too much. And sometimes it comes to us in a form that causes us to have more stress and to tend to avoid that stress by ignoring it. But you have to look at it from the viewpoint of you can control that kind of thing. I would like to mention one other thing for education of people that they might want to look at, for those that have computers and who doesn't these days. And it's called the Khan Academy, K-H-A-N Academy. And you can look in there for, you can pick the subject matter, but I would suggest that people go in and look, just type in personal finance when they get there. And they can get a little verbal, well, it's as if somebody were writing on a blackboard, wow. and you're watching them, tutorial on various subjects like that. So for basic knowledge, that's a good place to go for that kind of thing. And as I said, for retirement issues, certainly the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Overall, this is an important subject for me. It's an important subject for your listeners, and I've always had a commitment to this type of thing, which was why I got so involved in pension planning and that type of thing.
Well, and we appreciate it, because part of our goal at Cops Alive is to help officers survive their career. We believe that anybody that takes an oath and puts on a badge or a uniform, you know, deserves to, quote unquote, live happily ever after. And one of the ways, probably the most important way that that really happens, is through good financial planning. And without it, they may have had a heroic career, but the rest of their lives may be miserable, and nobody deserves that.
No. No. And it is a tragedy when that occurs, and they could have and can do something about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a matter of them, those of you listening, to take responsibility for your own lives, and this is a critical factor in your life. So please take some of this advice, take some of these resources, and spend a little bit of your time investing in what is so important to your entire life. Howard, I want to say, or Jake, I want to say thanks. Our guest today has been Howard Jakeway, former police chief from here in Colorado. But he also has spent an awful lot of his time and his career helping others understand finance, economics, and perhaps how they can manage their money. And it was a big help to us. So thank you very much. And you have been listening to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin, and we wish you to stay very safe and healthy and happy out there, and we will see you next time on another edition. Take care.